How are you travelling? There's lots of people out there that have, well, have been or are in isolation or have family members with the dreaded bug. And our thoughts are with you. Best wishes. And it's not an easy time with so much of it around the community at the moment. And those of you who are not, you might be out picking grapes. It's that time of the year, and I think we're on the Pinot at the moment. So if you are listening this morning, picking grapes out in the vineyard or something, good on you, and keep up the great work. You are listening to Bruce Argyle. This is Community Conversations, our regular Thursday morning program. I think we've been doing this for about 7 years now, and wow, we've had some amazing people on the program over that time. Interesting stories. If you've got a story that you want to tell, or your group is doing something really interesting, then we would love to hear from you as well. This morning, I have two amazing people in the studio here. The president of the Friends of the Helmeted Honey Eater, Alan Clayton. Hello, Alan. How are you?
Fine, thanks, Bruce. Great to be with you.
Yeah, really terrific. And Dr. Dorothy Scott. Well, I can say this morning rather cheekily, Dorothy, the one-eyed helmeted honey eater supporter, because I know you have just had some surgery on your eye. Thank you for coming in this morning. That's fantastic.
Lovely to be here with you.
We can still talk. We can't see each other on radio anyway, Dorothy, so it's not so bad.
Just as well.
But let's go back 33 years, Alan, to the establishment of the Friends of the Helmeted Honey Eater by one Steve Craig. I read up, it was May 1989, and then in his footsteps, the amazing Bob Anderson for over 20 years. You've got a pretty proud story there, Friends of the Helmeted Honey Eater.
Absolutely. The saying that the success is built on the shoulders of giants is absolutely the case. Now, Steve Craig, a remarkable wildlife officer with the then Department of Conservation, Forests and Lands, who was actually concerned about the deficiencies in his own department and called a meeting on the 23rd of May 1989 in the Lilydales Senior Citizens Club, where 200 good burghers, citizens, locals gathered.
So it had a great response right from the start.
Absolutely. Mm. And at that inaugural meeting, we still have members, in fact, a member of our committee of management was at that meeting on the 23rd of May 1989. So it's a loyal following.
Wow. There might be some people listening this morning, Alan, who don't know what the helmeted honey eater is. So we perhaps better go back a little and start there. Describe a helmeted honey eater for us. And I have heard a rumour that it's even our state emblem. Is that right?
It is indeed the state bird emblem, the avifaunal emblem. And it's a relatively small critter. It's about 20 centimetres from the bill to the tail.
Right, that's sort of about the length of my hand, probably.
That's about right, yes. Mm. Yes. It weighs, as an adult, between 30 and 35 grams. And it's a cheeky little critter.
And with a bit of yellow, I reckon.
Yes, yes. Yes. And it's, you know, one of the family of yellow tufted honey eaters, and it gets its name because it has a helmet, and that's where it gets its botanical name, Cassidix, or helmet, which distinguishes from its brethren. So
there's quite a few other honey eaters, aren't there? Other types.
Other honey eaters and the yellow tufted. So it's separated from its nearest cousin, the Gippslandicus subspecies, some 56,000 years ago.
Wow, wow! It's an amazing story because as we know, we wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for the fact that it's endangered and has been for some significant time. Roll back to the establishment 1989. Yes. What did people decide to do then? Alan, what was the sort of course of action with the establishment of the Friends of the Helmeted Honey Eater?
Well, the critical element, as with many threatened, endangered, critically endangered species, is the loss of habitat. So historically, the range of the Helmeted Honey Eater was from Watts River north of Healesville, down to Bass River down in Western Port, and critically around the Koorirup Swamp. And as people would understand, that land around creeks is valuable for agriculture, and so this land was cleared, drained and the like, and so the habitat disappeared. And also with the Ash Wednesday fire, there were two colonies, one at Cockatoo and one at Upper Beaconsfield, and unfortunately they were wiped out.
I didn't realise that.
Ash Wednesday fires. So it left the only place on the planet where you could see helmeted honeyeaters in the wild was in the what we call the sedge-rich eucalyptus camphora swamp around Yellingbow.
Well, we're talking a particular species, the amazing helmeted honeyeater, which is critically endangered and is right here in our very own backyard. And my two guests this morning, Dorothy Scott and Alan Clayton, are going to tell us all about it and why it's critically endangered and what, more importantly, what you, the listener, can do about it. And we've got to go back to 1971, Alan, and it was acclaimed as the state emblem.
Yes.
I think, if I'm right, chosen as Victoria's bird emblem. There we go.
It was, and in fact, the avid readers of the Government Gazette, which I'm sure there are many out there, would have found on the 10th of March, 1971, that there was in small print the proclamation of the helmeted honeyeater as the state's bird emblem.
There you go. That's 50 years ago.
That's right. And we actually celebrated it with the celebration at the zoo. And it was the first day that Deputy Premier was acting as Premier. And he opened the celebration for the 50th anniversary.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. Let's go back to the challenge that's facing the helmeted honeyeater. You've mentioned the fires where some of the colonies were lost. What is it in particular that makes it so difficult for the helmeted honeyeater to thrive, shall we say? Or, you know, why has there been such loss, aside from the degradation of land and so on?
Well, that
is the main one.
That is the main one, and it's the contraction of that land and also the degradation of that habitat. And so we have, you know, for instance, on the Cockatoo Creek, with landholders channelizing the creek and therefore the natural wetland disappearing. And then when you get that happening, you get situations of dieback, and there is a type of, you know, downward spiral. So part of what the intervention is replacing that habitat into a healthy ecological combination of plants.
And you've gone one step further to ensure that by establishing an indigenous plant nursery where you're actually growing the right kind of species for these birds, Alan. That's an amazing step.
That's right. And we supply those plants for the Shire of Yarra Ranges, Ribbons of Greens, for Parks Victoria, for Melbourne Water. And as a first, a scoop for your program, Bruce, the nursery will be reopening to the public on Tuesday, the 29th of March.
Wow, that is next Tuesday, and that's in Macclesfield Road in Yellingbow.
That's 1217 Macclesfield Road, Yellingbow.
And so next Tuesday, and then subsequently open a couple of days a week sort of thing, Alan?
On the Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays.
Fantastic. And I can walk in there and perhaps get a bit of advice on which plants I should be putting in and so on.
Absolutely. Michelle, our nursery manager, what she does not know about the indigenous plants of this area, nobody knows. So if anybody wants some assistance about what will grow best where, speak to Michelle or the other two staff that we have in the nursery.
Fantastic. The Yellingbow Nature Conservation Reserve provides habitat for the critically endangered helmeted honey eater and also the leadbeater's possum. We haven't got time to talk about them today, but and lots of other endangered plants and animals. And you're sort of building together with that conservation reserve with private landholders and others who, as you've just mentioned, establish some sort of ribbons of green or I suppose they're sort of, what should we say, corridors? Is that the right word for the birds?
Yes, in fact, the bird actually doesn't distinguish between public and private land. And so the work with private landholders is to establish those corridors, and we have had a flagship program initially called Yelling Bow to Butterfield. So along the Wurrialik Creek from the edge of the reserve down to Butterfield River Reserve in Monbulk, and that has engaged some 90 landholders
in
that period, and it's just been an amazing program.
Wow. And Dorothy, to bring you in, you're obviously heavily involved with the Landcare groups and working together in partnership with them. This is a whole of community approach, by the sounds of it.
Yes, Bruce, to engage the landholders along those creeks and tributaries that run into Yelling Bow and from it. It's required this wonderful partnership with three Landcare groups, Monbulk Landcare, Macclesfield Landcare and Johns Hill Landcare groups. And it's been a real pleasure and honour to chair the steering committee of that initiative, where we will come together, work together with philanthropic support, with support initially from the Helen McPherson Smith Trust and from the Quercus Fund of the Australian Communities Foundation. And so we employ for 12 hours a week a facilitator, and that person reaches out to landowners, often introduced to us by their neighbours, by local members of Landcare groups. And the things we've been doing with those landowners to fulfil their vision for the property of which they are the custodians.
And
that might be management of weeds, it might be fencing off the waterway itself, it might be revegetation, it could be control of feral animals. And so our facilitator helps to bring in the contractors who would be able to do those work, occasionally volunteers. We've done our own planting of trees along some of the private land. And it's always, of course, exactly what the landowner wishes for their property. And it's just been wonderful that, as Alan says, we've engaged more than 90 landowners.
Wow.
And we're now spreading way beyond Wurrialik Creek. So we have a 5-year plan to progressively work along those waterways. And we're bringing in to the effort to not just bring this bird back from the brink of extinction. And I should add that 10 years ago, there were 50 left in the wild. You can't get much closer to the brink of extinction than that.
That's very scary.
And now we have, 240 or so birds in the wild.
Wow, 240 is still not many.
That's right. It's not many, but it's turning around.
Yes.
This is a good news story in threatened species conservation, and private landowners play a vital role in that. So this is only one of the projects of the Friends of the Helmeted Honeyeater, but it goes back partly to the original purpose, which was to work with and on private land. For a few decades there, the efforts got very focused on the reserve itself. But that's why we call it Beyond Yelling Bow. We've got to help this bird get beyond Yelling Bow, because one bad bushfire, one disease could wipe out the whole of this remaining colony. And, of course, there's the inbreeding risk when they're in one place. So these corridors will help connect with the future colonies that will exist under a recovery plan, which Alan knows more about because he sits on the recovery team, which is the big picture for where this bird might be found in the future.
Mm.
But yes, the engagement of the local community
so important.
Is vital. And as I say, if it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a whole community to save a species. And all those other species
yes.
are part of this habitat.
You're listening to Dorothy Scott, and we're talking Friends of the Helmeted Honey Eater. And if you're one of those landowners, already the 90 that have been just mentioned, good on you and pat yourself on the back this morning. If you're a landowner in the valley and you haven't got involved yet, well, there's a wonderful opportunity, and please consider getting involved. And thanks for joining us this morning. I'm Bruce Argyle. You're listening to Community Conversations here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. My very special guests here in the studio this morning are Alan Clayton, who's the president of the Friends of the Helmeted Honey Eater, and Dr. Dorothy Scott, who is, well, Dorothy, lots of different things, heavily involved in land care, Friends of the Helmeted Honey Eater, and all things community, I suspect, around Macclesfield and Yellingbow and places beyond. Am I about right, Alan? Yes, you're nodding your head there. I think
Absolutely.
That's about right.
Yes.
let's just go off on a slight side thing, Alan, which is around the Citizen Science Project. That sounds pretty fascinating. Tell us about the Citizen Science Project.
It is coordinated by the remarkable Sue Tardif, and it is something that appeals to younger people, and there are a whole range of projects now for identifying creatures that are in the reserve. We've had James Fraser from Melbourne Water, who heads up their frog program.
Okay.
Identifying the local frogs.
Is this through schools, Alan, or...?
This is through our own program.
Okay.
We actually do have a schools program. It's called the Ambassador Program.
Oh, we'll come back to that.
Yes. But the Citizen Science program, and if people are interested in it, they can actually go to our website and go to the Get Involved, come to an event, and it lists there all the upcoming events.
And let me give the listeners the website, because there is so much information on there. I was looking yesterday and I was just going, wow. I felt on one hand amazed, on the other hand like tired. There's so much stuff you're doing there, which is absolutely fantastic. But it is www.helmetedhoneyeater, that's all one word, .org.au. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So just www.helmetedhoneyeater.org.au, and all sorts of information there on the programs we're talking about this morning, how you can get involved, how you can become a member. We'll talk about that later. And a whole lot of other very exciting things, Alan.
That's right. And so the programs involve about 12 to 15 people, and we structure it according to the Wurundjeri calendar of events. So we have a early winter event, which is coming up on Wednesday, the 13th of April, and another event on the 11th of May, and a deep winter event on the 22nd of June.
So okay, so whet my appetite. What might you be doing, Dorothy, on the 13th of April, for example? What would that look like?
Oh, well, I think we'd have to ask Sue Tardif of the activity of the time, but it could be something like a survey of vegetation, a particular reptile, looking for the many other birds in the reserve, doing counts. Yes, it could take various forms. So the exact focus of the early winter one, I can't actually.
No, that's all right.
Today, on the website, there will be forthcoming details, and of course inquiries and how to register.
Yep, so, and the focus for the day,
and
kind
the
of thing.
For
yeah,
the day,
yeah,
yes.
And that's open to any. I've got to be a certain age, though, I suspect.
We have a separate program for children and families.
Yeah.
But young people could come to the Citizen Science, indeed they do,
mm-hmm.
of course, with a parent or guardian.
Yes, yes,
So that's very important to note. And so, but bookings are essential because we need to cater for, it's a small group. The Citizen Science Mornings are for 12 to 15 people, all COVID safe, all of those sorts of
things. Yes.
So if you're interested in a bit of citizen science.
And are we talking Yelling Bow, Dorothy? Yes, we are.
Yelling Bow Nature Conservation Area. It's just changed its name reserved area.
Okay.
That's where these activities are all located, which is a closed reserve. So one of the great advantages of volunteering in a citizen science project or in some of the other projects and programs we have, of course, is that it allows you to go to this special place to see the bird in its natural habitat.
Fantastic.
Outside of the breeding season when we all keep a very low profile and keep out of the bird's way.
Yes. Tell us a little more, Dorothy, about how the Landcare groups have embraced what's happening here.
Well, the local Landcare groups came on board very, very quickly. We reached out to them and said, would you want to work with us, with landowners? And they were enthusiastic.
Mm.
And as I said, it was their members that initially invited their neighbours. When I started thinking about this project, and this wasn't my background, my background's in child welfare,
a different
field. But I had visions of a large public meeting where we'd bring people together in Wurrialik or in Macclesfield in the hall.
Yes.
And we'd all see what we could do. But the person appointed to be the first facilitator, Gay Gadsden, very experienced environmentalist who had worked at Yarra Rangers Council for a long time and much earlier was the first paid staff member of the Friends of the Helmet Honey Eater and had set up the nursery that Alan just mentioned. She had a very different idea and her wisdom prevailed. She said, now let's do it like an afternoon tea on the veranda.
Mm.
And so that's how we started, that Alan and I would go to a little group of maybe half a dozen people.
Out on the farm?
Out on the farm.
Yes.
Or on a smaller hobby property, on the front veranda, morning or afternoon tea, with a member of, say, Macclesfield Landcare and their immediate neighbours.
Yes.
And then Gray would bring out this huge map on the table, and people would be able to see their own properties. They'd be able to see how so many properties had been cleared, but also where the hope was for revegetation and how they could all be part of something bigger than themselves.
Fantastic.
And so Gay's approach has had the praise of people right across the country, including the
former Federal Threatened Species Commissioner, Dr. Sally Box.
Wow.
And in her presentations, she used it as the exemplary case study, as one of the best examples of practical conservation in the country.
Terrific.
So we're not government coming along telling people what they should do on their land. We're fellow locals reaching out and saying, how can we work
you with can you make a difference. You can make a difference.
A difference in terms of your vision for your property.
Yes.
Very different ethos. And, of course, Gay is a local and she's got her roots in her community. Now, she's retired, but we haven't lost her.
Along came the nursery then to be able to support these landowners to revegetate, Dorothy.
The nursery was there long before, so we already had that as an asset. Yeah, so all the revegetation we've been doing has been supported by the Friends of the Helmet Honey Eater Nursery. Yeah,
well, there you go. So I must admit, I haven't been down to the nursery, so I reckon that'll be on my list, which is absolutely fantastic. So you can become a member. You can also become a volunteer, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yes.
What does being a volunteer, what might that look like?
Well, the volunteer, there are nursery volunteers. Being able to be a volunteer, to be engaged in the citizen science program. We also collect seeds for the nursery, and our leader on that is Richard Case, who was there on the 23rd of May 1989.
Wow.
Who has an enormous knowledge of the area, and Rich and his group go out, collect seeds, and also do some spot weeding. They might see that there's something in the reserve that shouldn't be there, and so acting in time, they, you know, take out the offending weed.
Okay. So these are noxious sort of weeds and things like
that's
that.
That's right, yes, yes.
Which are also a huge problem, aren't they?
That's right.
Yeah. The membership, the volunteers, the people who are involved in the Friends of the Helmeted Uneater, are they a diverse group? Do you have young and old and people who are working and retired? And I mean, describe the group for us a little bit.
It is a very diverse group in background and age. I was up there 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we celebrated the 90th birthday of a very, very active volunteer in the nursery. So we have younger children with their parents or guardian, and Dorothy might say something about that youth group.
Please, Dorothy.
Yes, well, I did survey with our volunteer friend Amy Tipton a couple of years back on our volunteers, and we presented at a conference, Volunteering Victoria, and it was extraordinary to see the diversity. We have people who come from a significant distance. Of course, we're very keen on people who are live within, say, half an hour's drive. That's why it's so important to reach out to people in the Yarra Valley and the Dandenong Ranges. But the diversity in age, in background, and they're a happy group. I mean, I interviewed people about why they volunteered, and there was so much joy. And in fact, Alan and I started in, I think, 2010. Our first involvement was as volunteers in the nursery. We'd go up on a Tuesday morning, have a lovely morning tea out under the trees, around tables, propagate plants, and then it grew from there. So coming back from COVID, we probably don't need nursery volunteers right now because we are having reduced numbers in who can congregate around tables, etc. But there is a bit of a wait list, I think. So that's one area where people, particularly retirees, have been interested.
Yes.
But we've also got young people on our committee of management who are really into social media.
Fantastic.
And trying to engage a younger cohort. And certainly the Citizen Science Mornings attract young adults. And some of our revegetation days, we've had young university students and others, local young people, come and plant alongside us, sometimes with music in the background, with a band playing. You know, we have fun. We have fun.
And you were saying
together.
And you were saying off air, Dorothy, that you also have supporters more broadly across the state who travel or who support you in more broadly in other ways as well.
Yes, I think because the Helmeted Uneater is the bird emblem of Victoria, and because it's a pretty heroic story, this coming back from the brink of extinction is sadly not common. And so we do tend as a group, I think, to inspire people. We have people who come from quite a distance who are members of our committee of management and on citizen science and in volunteering in whole sort of ways that we have. And that's because threatened species conservation is often a sad saga. Mm. And this is a story of hope and promise.
Yes.
So we've got also people who are interested in the science. The science underpinning this is extraordinary. Mm. Researchers at Monash University in genetics, at Melbourne University, of course, Healesville Sanctuary with its captive breeding program.
Yes, amazing, isn't it?
Which has been so central to the recovery of this species. It's all based on very sophisticated science.
Yes.
But you don't have to be a sophisticated scientist. You can just put your gloves on and plant trees or put on the binoculars and see what's happening in the boughs above or in amongst the frogs on the ground. Mm. And we've got a particular passion for engaging children.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful. We were talking about the importance of the involvement of children with the friends. You were also saying that you've got a Kids in Conservation morning coming up. Tell us about that.
Well, Kids in Conservation is a whole new program led by Sue Tardiff and with our new environmental coordinator, Eliza. And this is bringing preteens and their parents into the reserve, Yellingbo Nature Conservation Area, to really have fun and learn about nature in a way that's very centred around nature play and conservation activities, sharing stories. So very, very child-focused. There'll be a little bit of planting, but it's not exploitation of child labour. it's creating fun opportunities for families.
And probably exposing them to things that they haven't been before at all. Yes,
and this is going to be very exciting. So it's important to register, and we have numbers capped at 25. But if a family group takes us slightly over that, then we're going to be flexible about that.
And when is it, Dorothy?
Things are essential, and it's coming up with registrations for Sunday the 22nd of May, starts at 9:30 in the morning, finishes at noon. Bring your own lunch if you like and stay on for a bit longer. And then on the 19th of June, again for a Sunday morning, and then on the 17th of July for the Sunday morning. We'll have a little break in August and then we'll go on from there. But this is a brand new initiative, and we're hoping that families with preteens in our region will come and be part of this group.
Mm. It's a great opportunity, Dorothy.
And this is the newest of a long series of ways of engaging children. Children, of course, are our conservationists of the future. But there's also a lot of evidence that children engaging in nature and in being a contributor to threatened species recovery or to just the growth of trees actually is good for them. Child resilience is enhanced by them having a sense of agency that they're a contributor. And so
they are making a difference.
Yes. So our ambassador program in schools that Alan probably knows a little more about than I do, that's been going now for quite a number of years. I think this year we have Berwick Lodge, which has the bird as their school emblem engaged.
Right.
And the other one would be the Yarra Ranger School is...
Well, we have Macclesfield Primary School.
Of course.
And Chum Creek Primary School.
Terrific. So schools are coming on. They are coming on board and getting directly involved.
Well, and of course, this takes time and effort and money, and we would be delighted if there are any local businesses who would like to get behind the program and perhaps sponsor the program in a local school. If they would like to talk to me, I can give
you a contact there if you like, Alan. It's just email's probably best. president@helmetedhoneyeater.org.au.
That's it.
There we go. So
I'd love to hear from you.
There's a wonderful opportunity for you amazing business people out there in the valley and the ranges to get involved hands on. With a program in a school that is actually making a difference in this area. That's a great opportunity, Alan. Yeah, so there you go. Get in touch with Alan and he'll tell you all about it. We're almost out of time. Can you believe that? The time has gone so quickly. If you've missed the program this morning, it will be podcast in about a week. Thank you, Greg. And you can have a listen then. If you want to know more about the Helmeted Honeyeater, go to their website, helmetedhoneyeater.org.au, and everything is on there, including how to become a member, how to be a supporter, how to make a donation before the end of the financial year, how to get involved in the ambassador program, or Dorothy was just telling you about the Kids in Conservation mornings. It's actually, about once a month?
Yes.
Dorothy. And is there a fee for that? Is that something that people... can just come along to, or
no, that's free. We have a small grant from Parks Victoria to help bring the community into the life of reserves, which are managed by Parks Victoria. So, no, that is free.
Terrific.
As is the ambassador program for the actual children participating.
Terrific. My step today is I've made a diary note that I'm going to get down to the nursery, the Indigenous plant nursery that is run at 1217 Macclesfield Road in Yellingbo, and buy some plants. And, well, that sounds like a terrific opportunity for anybody who can get involved, Alan. And it's reopening next Tuesday, and it's going to be open Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays between 9 and 3, I think, or thereabouts. So if you don't do anything else, get down to the nursery and buy some plants. There you go. Thank you so much, Alan. Thank you so much, Dorothy. It's been wonderful. We've run out of time. But we can tell the Yellingbo story, the Friends of the Helmet and Aniyita story, more loudly, I think, than we have in the past. It needs to be out there, doesn't it?
Thank you so much, Bruce, for having us.